Hello, my name is Edgar King, and I am the lead pastor of Trinity Vineyard Church, Nakuru. I am so grateful that you are tuning into our podcast today. Head over to our Facebook page and see some of the information that you may need if you're in Nakuru and you'd like to join us. Nonetheless, we will still be online for those who are unable to join us in person. Thank you very much. I hope this installation of talks today will be a blessing to you.
We've probably all seen videos online of animals of different species being raised by animals of other species, right? You know, you've probably seen a fox being raised by a dog, and it ends up thinking and living like a, thinking it's a dog and living like a dog. Or guinea fowls being raised by chickens, they end up thinking they're chicken, right? Dogs raised by human end up thinking they are children, right? And they're on the couch, they're everywhere. It's a Mowgli Tarzan situation. Anyone knows Mowgli? No? Yes. Okay, good. So I'm not totally alone. There's a sad story of a girl who was found in 2009. Was found in 2009 when she was 5 years old, and she had been mistreated by her parents, and she was raised like an animal, okay? So they didn't take care of her. They didn't care about her. So she grew up thinking she was one of the animals. So she would eat like a cat. She would drink water like a dog. When introduced to people, she would jump on them like dogs would, or hiss, or you know how dogs greet each other. She would walk on all fours. Now that story is sad. So I want to tell you the ending soon enough. She was rescued, and I tried to find information about her. Her name is Natasha Mikhailova. She was Russian. So she was rescued. So that's great news. I couldn't find any new information on her because I think a 15-year-old just deserves to live like a 15-year-old. So that's kind of cool. I hope she's doing okay. But I want us to notice that she didn't realize that animals in her house answer to her. She didn't realize that she was the child of the house. She thought she was one of the animals because that's how she was raised. She missed out on who she was, you know? Seeing different species, she was actually called the Mowgli girl. Seeing different species being raised by different species, it doesn't change them to be that, right? So Mowgli doesn't become a bear, but he actually thinks he is. A fox raised by a dog isn't a dog, but it could think it's a dog. And I see this play out. I think we see this play out every day in our lives. When we live out of false identities, it doesn't change who we are, who he is. Oh my word, what's happening today? It doesn't change who we are. Oh yeah, just before I go on, I'm actually a very funny guy. There was a thing on Facebook going on and people are saying, so please laugh out loud because so that people online can think we're funny. Anyway, that was a joke. There we go. Okay. Yes. Now let's try do it without having me to say that was a joke. That would work better. Anyway, so where was I? I'm lost. What was I saying? So I was saying that this is not an uncommon place. But living out a false identity doesn't change who you are. But so, it's so sad. That for 5 years, this girl lived like thinking her identity was one of these, you know? And here's the thing. Your identity determines how you live life, all of life. Your identity determines how you will do business. Your identity determines how you live out your life as a spouse, as a partner, as a child, as someone's son or daughter. Your identity is from where you will live life. And if you want to know what we're talking about, what is your answer to the question, who are you? If someone said, hey, tell us who so-and-so is. If someone said, hey, tell us who Jackson is. Nowadays, I use Jackson more because I see him right there. Who is Jackson? What are the answers you come up with? If someone asked you to complete the statement, I am, how would you complete it? So, humor me for a second and actually think about it. We won't take too long. Just think about it and hold them right here. Right, hold those adjectives or descriptors right here. Complete the statement, I am. No, don't worry. Don't shout out loud. I just want you to hold them right here. Okay? We got a few descriptors that you, if you ask, tell me about so-and-so, you would use. Okay. That's what we want to be talking about in the next few weeks. So, I want to guess that some of us talked about their gender. Some of us talked about their race. Some of us talked about their sexuality. Some of us talked about their nationality. So there are answers like, I am Luo, or I am Kalenjin, I am Kenyan, I am black, I am white, I am a doctor, or no, I am not. And all these are important. All these are important, but the problem is they are very narrow descriptors of who we are. But that's often where we go to. Who are you? Well, I am a mother of five, and I am Luo, and I am a teacher. That's where we often go. And those are important. I don't want you to miss the point. They're not unimportant, but they're narrow descriptors of who we are. Your nationality can only tell you what country you're a citizen of, but nothing about who you really are. Your genetics, because that's a big deal nowadays in the West. Hey, let me find out where I came from. Your genetics can only tell you where you came from, who you come from, but not exactly who you are. If I say I'm black, do you know that would mean I am one in 3 billion people in this world? So that doesn't exactly tell me who I am. I'm not saying it's not important. It's very important. If you say you're white, great, but that's not exactly who you are. Your jobs and careers, I am learning that they only tell us what opportunities we got. As we started running after life, what opportunities we got to make a living and find our fulfillment. They don't exactly tell you who you are. They are hugely important, but they are narrow descriptions. Actually, they are secondary to who we are. And sadly, politics, economics, or economic theories and philosophies, movies, religion, everybody wants a say in describing who you are. Everybody wants to tell you, reflect back who they think you are. You know, you walk around places and they first want to know what kind of job do you do for them to think, for them to box you into who they think you are. Well, how do you vote so that we can box you into what we or who we think you are? And sadly, what this means is that we'll become the human cub Mowgli was, right? The environment shaped who he thought he was, so he just became a human cub. But that doesn't mean that's who we are. You know, if we're not aware of who we are, any political philosophy, any economic philosophy, any philosophy that is sweeping through society will sweep us, because society will not lose its chance in trying to shape or tell you who you are, you know? But here's what's, I think this is what's beautiful about finally knowing who we are. You get freedom. We stop trying to please people. You know, you get to know when to say yes and when to say no, because you know who you are. You know who you are. And, you know, you get to know that you have a seat at God's table. You're not begging for a seat at God's table. You have a seat at God's table. So even when people who hold the keys to the church say you can't come in, that doesn't mean you're not accepted. When we know who we are, I think it's like when people grow old and they stop caring about it, they stop caring who's around them. Now, some of it is just people losing it a little, But some of it is the freedom of finally accepting who they are. They stop caring, they say whatever's on their mind. And sometimes that's a bad thing, but they just say it. My grandma just, if she didn't like you, she didn't like you, and she wouldn't pretend. If she liked you, oh boy. You know, she said some of the most politically incorrect things, but she wasn't trying to please anyone. And she just brought herself, as she grew older, she just brought herself to conversations, to rooms she stepped into. And when we'd go visit, she'd jump off her feet, you know, whatever jumping means at the age she was at, and she would start dancing. And it was weird because clearly our bodies degenerate as we grow older. So watching my grandma dance was just a bit weird, and we knew what was coming. She's coming towards our faces. She wants to kiss us on our faces, and she was losing her teeth, so that was weird. But even her love, she was getting to be fully herself. She wasn't trying to please people. I think that's what it looks like to finally know who we are, you know? But what if people actually got to know who they are before their old age? Or even in our old age, because sometimes even in our old age, we simply pick what society has said we are and we become comfortable. What if even in our old age, or as we, as those who are not... The funny thing about old age, it just strikes you, you're old, right? Sorry, I think I went off script, but... You know, I feel like my knees nowadays just ache for no reason. But then those who are older than me in this room are probably going, oh, you know nothing yet. So I'm wondering, what if people know who they are long before their old age? Imagine what we'll be bringing to the table. Imagine what we'll be bringing to any room we walk into. We will be bringing life because we will be fully alive. So we'll walk in fully alive, you know? I think that's why people are rushing to do DNA analysis of their family tree, because we're trying hard to find out who we are. Our histories have become even more important. Even nations, because national identities matter too. Nations are digging back into their history because how they live out their national identity is influenced by all that. And they got the right idea. Sadly, we're starting at the wrong place. People have gotten the right idea, but sadly, we're starting at the wrong place. Your history can only tell you what your forefathers did. Not really who you are. Now, it's hugely important, but it's secondary. So I want to invite us... I'll try not to use that line. Anyway, so... I will still invite you anyway to start with me from the beginning. You know, it's so cool to know that people listen. I just hope they listen to what I actually hope to be saying. So I want to read our story, our beginnings, in the book of beginnings, or Genesis, chapter 1. I'll read 1, 26 and 28, to 28. In the beginning, God created everything, the heavens above and the earth below. Jump into 26. And then God said, now let us conceive a new creation, humanity, made in our image, fashioned according to our likeness. And let us grant them authority over all the earth, the fish in the sea, and the birds in the sky, and the domesticated animals, and the small creeping creatures on the earth. So God did just that. He created humanity in his image, created them male and female. Then God blessed them and gave them this directive. Be fruitful and multiply. Populate the earth. I am making you trustees of my estate. So care for my creation and rule over the fish of the sea, the birds of the sky, and every creature that roams across the earth. The story begins, and we are not even the center of the story. I think sometimes we have a very false interpretation of our own identity. We think we are the center of the universe. Actually, we're not. The story begins with, in the beginning, God. He is the center that holds everything together. We're not the center. And so the narrator starts telling us, it actually goes, and this is how it went. And he starts telling us about how God created one thing after the other. And I like that every other day, God looked at what he had made and he was so satisfied, he said, I can take a rest today. He's looking at the light and goes, wow, that is good. I'm taking a break. He calls out the fish in the sea and he looks at them and, oh my word, that is beautiful. I can take a break. And then he gets to us. So this is exciting for me. Because I think God gets excited. The rhythm changes. All the other things is just saying, hey, let there be, let there be. And they rush in obedience. We are still having stars being born today. They are still rushing in obedience to God's voice. But when it came to humanity, he stopped. I think he's getting excited. You know? The rhythm changes. And he goes, hey, how about we create humanity? What does that look like? I think it'll be people fashioned in our image and likeness. What do you think about that? And he does exactly that. God is excited. You know, I think this is why I think it's a big deal. He looked at creation and he loved what he had done. He loved his work enough to rest each day. And now he's thinking, why not bring other creatures who will create in our image and likeness to enjoy all this? To also feel the love of all this. He's looking at the fellowship the Trinity has and he's thinking, why not create humanity to enjoy this fellowship, to enjoy this completeness, to enjoy the everlasting love we share? God is excited just thinking about you, just thinking about us. God is excited. Or as one of my friends likes to say, excited. And so God does just that. This is our identity. We are fashioned in the image and likeness of God. We are fashioned to enjoy intimacy with God because that's exactly who he is. In the Trinity, there is complete intimacy. Being fully known, being fully loved, being fully accepted. In the Trinity, there's oneness. So this is what we're invited to. And this also means we're invited to reflect that onto creation. God's care, God's creativity, God's love for each other and the world around us. This is our identity. Now I know if you've been around church, you've probably heard this a lot. If you went to high school in Kenya, you probably heard this a lot when they taught you about creationism. That's what I call it. But humor me again for a second. Remember the descriptors we were holding? I want us to move them one step down and put that at the very beginning. It's okay. You're female, you're male, you're Kenyan, you're black, you're white. Just humor me for a second and push those back and have at the front this, that you are created to be God's image and likeness. How does that change things for you? If you just for a moment step back and think about what does that mean about how you act, how you respond in your business, how you are as an employee, how you are as a husband or a wife, how you are as someone's son or someone's daughter. How does that change when we push everything else? Okay, you're Kikuyu. How does being created in the image and likeness of God change that when it's first and foremost? Because I think this is what is primary. Everything else is secondary. So how do we live out our lives primarily from that identity? One day Jesus was hanging out with his disciples and he asked them, who do people say I am? And you know, he was a big deal. When you're a big deal around town, everybody feels like they have something to say about you. Well, I know him as this, and I know, you know, everyone has a descriptor for, say, President Uhuru, right? Because we all know him. So this was the kind of situation Jesus was in. People knew him, so everybody had something to say about Jesus. So he asked his disciples, who do people say I am? And we're all, you know, we like saying, I don't care what people think, but we all kind of go, what do people think about me? So Jesus asked this question. And usually, if you're a very big deal, people around you are kind of excited that they're the closest to you, so they feel like they know you better. And so it's always funny when they walk around and hear what people think about you, you know? So the disciples start going, oh, you know, I've heard some people saying you're John the Baptist. Now, John was a prophet who had just been murdered by Herod. So people are saying, you remember John was murdered? I think he came back to life in this guy. Another one says, oh, yeah, I've heard people say he's Elijah. Elijah was a prophet from very old, and tradition held it that Elijah would come back. So already people are going, I think this is Elijah. The prophecy is fulfilled. And some other disciples say, well, I think I've heard people say he's some other prophet, you know? And here's the thing. This is very clear. The world will never miss something to say about you. The world wants to define you. This is exactly what's happening with Jesus. They've seen Jesus, met Jesus, heard about Jesus, and they're puzzled. There's something about Jesus they just can't quite put their finger on. They can see a little bit of prophetic in him, and they think, or a lot of prophetic in him, and they're thinking, it must be a prophet. And you know, John and Jesus were related, so maybe even there was some facial resemblances. I think it's John. The world will see things about you and decide that you are that. But those are very narrow things. He might have done a few things like Elijah. He might have said a few things that were similar to what some other prophet said. He might have said a few things that were similar to what John said. He might have done a few things similar to what John did. But that wasn't Jesus. This is the danger. The world will look at you and look at one narrow thing and decide that's you. The world will look at your race and decide that that's your identity. The world will look at your tribal group and decide that that's your identity. And if we listen to the world, what tragedy it would have been if Jesus decided, oh, I guess I'm John. What tragedy, and that looks ridiculous partly because we know the story, but what tragedy it is when we live out our daily lives picking out what the environment has said we are, picking out what society has said we are, picking out what politics has said we are. Oh, I guess I'm this. And we start living in that mold. So be careful not to let the world decide to label you. Anyway, Jesus switches the question and says, but who do you say I am? So these guys were excited because they're in the inner circle. They kind of know Jesus. And when the questioner switched, they went quiet. Because here's the thing. They were close to Jesus, and around him, they could feel God's kingdom come. Around him, it felt like heaven was kissing earth. Around him, they saw the sick made well. Around him, they felt comfort. Around him, they were healed. They were meeting God in Jesus. And so they didn't know what to do with this. So they went quiet. And here's why they went quiet. They had left their lives to follow this man. And they could tell there was something about him. At some point, they actually said, you are the words of life itself. So they could tell there was something. What they think Jesus is says a lot about who they think they are. What they think Jesus is says a lot who they think they are, and I think that's why they were quiet. They didn't know exactly whom they decided to follow. And so one of them moves forward and says, I'm going to read it, yes, and says in Matthew 16, 16 to 19, you are the Christ, you are the Son of the living God. Jesus said to him, Simon, son of Jonah, your knowledge is a mark of blessing, for you didn't learn this truth from your friends or from teachers or from sages. You've met you've met on the way. You learned it from my Father in heaven. This is why I've called you Peter, the rock. For on this rock I will build my church. The church will reign triumphant. Even the gates of hell, Peter. No. Even at the gates of hell. Sorry, I don't know what's happening. Peter, I give you the keys of the kingdom. Whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. And whatever you lose on earth will be loosed in heaven. Peter finally starts to see who he is. Why? Because he has seen who Jesus is. Peter gets it right. Jesus is the Son of God. And finally, Peter can start seeing himself for who he is. You know, I like that the translation says, that is why I have called you the rock. You know, I wonder if this is a name Jesus had used for Simon for a while. And, you know, I imagine they're walking around and he's going, why does this guy call me the rock? You know, or maybe he's excited about it because, like, oh my word, I got a pet name. Because let's be honest, in our tiny circles, we set apart the people we love sometimes by giving them a pet name, right? We call them something different from what the crowd calls them. Too bad sometimes we even forget their names. Or, you know, so maybe this was the situation. Peter had a different name. Why? Because Jesus was calling him out. You know, I have a name that only my family calls me. So when random people use it, I go, wait, where did you get that? You know? Because there's something about names that tells us the relationship we have with the one who's calling us. Finally, this was beginning to make sense to Peter. So maybe he'd heard this name long as they had been with Jesus. And finally he's going, oh, this is why this guy calls me the rock. But here's the point. Peter would never have realized who he actually is if he didn't see Jesus for who he is. Because once he saw Jesus as the Son of God, he can now accept that Jesus can give him the keys to the kingdom. Once he saw Jesus as the Son of God, he's, you know, the action of being knighted by the queen? Only the queen can knight you. If somebody else does it, it's meaningless. So if somebody else told Peter, you are the rock, I will be, it's meaningless. But because he saw Jesus for who he was, he could finally accept his identity, his identity from the foundations of the earth, that you are Peter, you are this. And I have known you. We keep saying you've known us before we were knit in our mother's womb. Wouldn't it be exciting when we finally see God and he can tell us, yes, I knew you and this is who you are. Because when we meet God for who he is, we meet ourselves for who we are. When we see God as this excellent creator, every puzzle of creation, you know, we keep discovering new things, new species. Forget this little planet that we are having trouble taking care of. The ever-expanding universe created by God. You know? And to this day, things are still responding to his voice. You know? Even the fact that the novel coronavirus is new means creation is still ongoing. When we finally see God in all that amazement as creator and father of all creation, we start discovering who we are. Because if that is who God is, if we see Jesus as King of Kings, Lord over all the universe, and the one who keeps it, who ties it together, we finally start seeing who keeps us and ties us together. You know, empires come and go, governments come and go. Little elders were in Bondo sometime. Whatever they do, that will come and go. But the kingdom of God stands. I want to call the band as I come to a conclusion. It's only when we see God for who he is that we can start seeing ourselves for who we are. The The revelation of Jesus to John, or what is simply called the book of Revelation, talks about how God gives each one of us a name. That is what comes before every other descriptor we've used this morning. You know? And I think this is that Peter moment. When we finally see God face to face, he will tell us, "Oh, my faithful son, here is what I have been calling you all along." And finally it will make sense to us why he led us through the paths he led us to, why he invited us to the places he invited us. Finally it will make sense to us. This is why he's always called me this. Yet the kingdom of God is now. Because Jesus came, we can meet God now. And we can start knowing ourselves now until its full completion when Jesus returns. So, back to our earlier question. Who are you? Is it possible for you to lead your life this week from a place of knowing that you are completely loved? Before you're male, before you're female, before your race, before your sexuality, before your nationality, you are completely loved. You're accepted, you're invited to unity with the Father, you're invited to wholeness. Can you lead your life from that place? What kind of wife will it make you? What kind of mother will it make you? What kind of student will it make you? And then, can you lead your life this week from a place of knowing that you, because we wonder, what's our purpose? What's our purpose? Well, first and foremost, you have been invited to reflect God's image and likeness to everyone and anything you meet. So even if you're still struggling with what you are made for, here's one thing that's for sure. You have been invited, you've been created to reflect God's creativity, to reflect God's kindness, to reflect God's care for each other and for the world, to reflect the love God has for you and for the world around us. He was excited when he thought about you. I don't know how you are when you're excited, but I sometimes lose it. I can't sit, I can't stop talking. Sometimes I hit people around me, I'm excited. I don't know how God is when he's excited. But I know that he was excited when he thought about you. Can you lead this week from that place? Why don't you stand? I think that the act of creation was, in my view, was very intimate. Because rhythm stopped. It took a new rhythm. It was an intimate kiss. And so when God breathed out, we breathed in and we came alive. And every time we breathe out, we breathe the very life he gave us. So as the worship team sings, I just invite you to stay in that place of stillness. And just breathe. Breathe in the presence of God. Breathe in what God is saying about you today. Breathe in what God is calling you. And I'll come back up shortly and lead us through communion.